So, have you ever thought about what would happen if your airline window popped out?
Or if you can build a jetpack using only machine guns?
Well, we found out you could, but you really shouldn't. Hi, I'm Jill Chacha.
And I'm Marissa Riley.
Together, we have one comedy science-y show called, well, that's interesting.
It's for folks who like to learn about weird stuff, like how hair can grow between your teeth and what happens if the moon disappears.
If you need a break from the world or need interesting stuff to bring up at a party when those happen again, come on by.
Find Well That's Interesting wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
In the pines where the sun never shines, you'll shiver when the cold wind blows. There's a grave in the pine where the sun never shines. There's a grave that's shaded with a pine.
On the Slay Queens podcast, we take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
This isn't just a cheesy catchphrase. It is a note to remember that the topics we discuss can be very graphic and lurid in nature. Listener discretion has been advised.
We are live.
We are live, live, live.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back.
And welcome back to Wayne.
Most importantly, though, welcome back to you, Ashley.
Okay. Some little redemption from calling me the bitch last week. Is that what it was?
I'm going to try to be nice.
Someone you hated or something.
No, I was like, speaking of people you love to hate.
That's what it was. That's what it was.
No, it was an ill-placed joke.
No, it was actually pretty good because when I did listen back, I was like, well, you know, I'm kind of taking that as like a Madison Montgomery comparison. So
exactly.
I'm all right with that.
Exactly.
Not too bad.
I was trying to be funny in a loving, jovial, jesty sort of way.
That's what we do around here.
That is what we do around here. What else is it that we do around here, Ashley?
We take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow.
You do that so well.
I try to do it a little different every time, you know?
Yeah, just put a little
emphasis.
Yeah, I was going to try to work that in there. Yeah, a different emphasis on a different syllable.
That's right. That'll never get old.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It never, ever, ever will. So hi, welcome back everybody. Welcome back to the Queens, Kings, and Folks here to the Slay Queens podcast, where we do in fact take a deep dive into the dark side of the rainbow. It's also what, Ashley?
It's a titillating, it's a podcast of titillating tales.
Titillating tales full of shenanigans and tomfoolery.
Yes, and I feel like with the new mics and everything, this whole new setup, just hearing the sound titillating tails is very
it is very
ASMR.
Pleasing. ASMR, very pleasing to the ear.
Right?
Yes.
It's like I'm on NPR.
I am tactfully partaking of my titillating Starbucks. Yeah, I got nothing.
No more. No
I got
more.
Nothing. That's it. All right. So, Ashley.
Yeah.
Shall we kick off this episode after 2 minutes of just nothingness, basically.
That's all right. It's only 2 minutes.
With a rainbow star.
Yes, please. Would
peruse? Ooh, I would love to peruse, actually. Okay. If you are new here, we do a rainbow star. This is where we are queer and we also give shout outs, thank yous. We make announcements or give acknowledgments and we also offer recommendations. This week, I would, in fact, like to shout out the fellas from the Florida Men on Florida Man podcast. It's actually a really entertaining podcast. I've listened to a few different episodes. The hosts are Greg, Wayne, we love a good Wayne, Josh, and Cameron. And the description is, the Florida Men on Florida Man podcast features crazy but true stories from the Sunshine State. And, I mean, I think we can all pretty much agree that, like, the craziest shit is going down in Florida, right?
Oh, yeah. If you haven't, like, Googled Florida Man and then your birthday, go ahead and do it. You need to.
Yeah. And this, like I said, it's an entertaining podcast, but it's one of the most brilliant podcast ideas I've ever heard.
It didn't dawn on me when I heard the name at first, but I was like, oh, that makes sense. That's pretty amazing. I love that.
So love those guys.
Yeah.
We would like to shout them out, and we would also like to thank them for all the love that they have shown us recently on the social medias. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
It is a twofer.
It is a twofer. I don't actually have an announcement to make, so I'm going to roll that one over to Ashley.
Well, we made a TikTok.
We did.
We don't know what to do with it.
We are clueless.
I have a personal TikTok as well. I have never posted anything. I just enjoy watching. So yeah, if ours is there, the domain is there. We decided to take it. I mean, truth be told, Wayne decided to take it just in case we ever wanted to, you know, yeah. use it. If anybody wants to give us a tutorial or walk us through, we'll start posting things. But if you want to tag us in things, it's already there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just wanted to make sure that if at some point we were going to try and reclaim some of our youth,
right.
And we wanted to actually start participating with the goings on there,
that's right,
in TikTok land, that we wanted to make sure that we had secured the screen name Slay Queens Pod.
That's exactly right.
So we did that, mm-hmm. and now we have it. Ashley, you saw me earlier. I opened it and literally was frightened and just had to close it immediately.
Right back. Yeah, it does. It just jumps right out at you. It just immediately starts. Yeah. It's not unassuming like Instagram where you actually have to click the photo for it to play the sound.
Yeah, I feel like it was attacking me.
It just happens.
But we welcome any, I guess, love and praises via TikTok.
Yeah.
Is that a thing you do on TikTok?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we welcome that. And we also welcome any guidance as to how we might go about actually using the damn thing.
We're going to figure it out. But yeah, any help is welcome.
Okay. Any other announcements or acknowledgements?
I don't think I have any. But I know that you have a good recommendation.
I do have a good recommendation.
So I want you to do that first.
That I have been saving because I wanted to have the opportunity to recommend it to you, but not only you, but all the rest of the folks.
Okay, yes, please.
All right, so Nikki Tutorials. Are you familiar with her?
I don't think so.
She does. She's very, very, very successful. She's a YouTuber who primarily does makeup tutorials, and she's got tens of millions of followers at this point and a whole, 10-year career.
Okay, right, well, I've probably seen her at some point.
I'm sure you
have. I watch plenty of makeup artists.
I'm sure you have. She recently came out as transgender, as in, within the last year.
Wow.
Yeah. Because that has happened, and she lost her little brother recently to cancer, and she's had a lot of really, formative things happen.
Mm-hmm.
She decided to do kind of a docuseries her YouTube channel.
Okay.
So right now, I don't know if they're going to do more seasons because they did specifically label this season one.
Sure.
So that leads me to believe that maybe there will be other seasons, maybe depending on how successful it is.
It's like a pilot season kind of.
Yeah. So it's season one, episodes 1-4, and they're anywhere from 15 to 25 minute videos.
Oh, okay.
So good.
I
did
I
cry
this.
Yes.
I was just gonna say I'm gonna get emotional, I'm
yeah.
sure.
Did I cry? Yes. Did it give me a whole new respect for her? Yes. Did it make me want to punch the person in the face who ultimately was blackmailing her, saying, mm-hmm. I'm gonna tell the world that you're transgender and that's gonna fuck up your career, which is what ultimately led her to be like, you know what, screw you guys, I'm gonna come out on my own. And mm-hmm. did I then go and watch the coming out video, and it was absolutely stunning. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to be watching that.
So good.
That's
I highly
a great,
recommend
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I know. I see why you waited to tell me.
Mm-hmm. I figured all the folks would appreciate that
well.
But
that's
you can
amazing.
Find all of those on the Nikki Tutorials YouTube channel, and they're so fucking good. I will probably watch them all again just so I can have a good cry and a good catharsis.
I mean, I totally understand that. I totally get that.
Yeah. Okay. Anything from you, my dear?
I don't think so. Not this week. I don't have anything good. I've been watching. Actually, you know what?
What?
We watched. You know what we watched last night? It was one of your recommendations.
Ooh.
Again. The Deeper You Dig.
Oh, is it not so good?
Okay.
Or what did you think?
No, it was amazing.
Yeah.
But girl did not warn me how trippy it was. I get paranormal, whatever. But
yeah.
Holy shit, Sierra was like, we have to watch this again. Because she's like, I'm just so baffled by some of the editing. It's beautiful, but it's there is so much that happens that you're just like, wait, what?
There
it's
is
done
a
well.
Lot of that.
Yeah.
And I think originally when I offered the recommendation, I was like, you know, it has so many different elements because you think that it's going to be a straight, true crime, sort of
sure,
situation.
Exactly.
And then it turns into this paranormal situation.
And the moment I realized that the deeper you dig, it's named that for a reason kind mm-hmm. of thing. I was like, oh, I love this.
It was
such a good title.
So good. It
yeah.
was so well done.
Definitely really good. Not anything. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah.
And those actors I thought were super talented
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't place any of them, I don't think, in any other film.
Agreed.
I don't think
yeah.
I've seen them do anything else.
No, you're
but
right.
But hopefully we'll see them do some other things in the future.
Oh, for sure. Especially the younger girl.
Yeah, for sure.
I loved her.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Yeah, so that I recommend that. for a second time, I second that recommendation. And I concur. How about a very hearty thank you to you for recommending it?
Aw, thank you.
You got it back. It's got the Slay Queen stamp now.
Ooh, the Slay Queen's stamp of approval. Mm-hmm. We love that.
Slay Queen seal.
Slay Queen...
We'll figure that out later.
Yeah, we'll figure out what we like. It took us long enough to decide on Queen's Law.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Just a few episodes. We'll find our spot.
We'll find it. We're getting there.
So yeah, we're gonna, do you want to take a break and then...
Yeah, let's take a quick break and then we shall come back for more. We are, of course, back again.
We are.
And this week, Ashley will be playing the role of the review recap queen and I am somewhat-ish being the research queen.
You'll see why that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. It'll all be clear.
It'll all come together.
At some point.
Yes, that's right.
The end point. All right, Ashley, I am all ears, ready to hear this.
This week, we are reviewing, talking about a Netflix three-part series, I Am a Killer, released. So both of us have watched the show I Am a Killer, but this particular one, I guess I'll just read the description on Netflix. It says, in this crime docuseries spinoff, a convict is paroled 30 years after being sentenced to death for murder. Then he makes a stunning confession, which I thought was a pretty good description.
That is an excellent description,
It's to the point,
actually.
Straight to the point, but there's still that element of like, wait, what?
Yeah, it leaves you feeling intrigued.
Because truth be told, like, I don't really read the descriptions of like shows before I watch them. Like, I watched all of I Am a Killer, the original one.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what it was going to be about. It just seemed like it was up my... I mean, they recommend it, right? So yeah. Why wouldn't I watch it?
Do you watch the trailers?
Definitely for movies.
Okay.
A lot of the times, if it's a show that someone has, a few people have recommended and there's, a lot of seasons, then yeah, because I want to know what I'm getting myself into.
Okay.
But regularly, it's like, if you recommend something to me, I'm probably just going to watch it.
Yeah.
Okay. You know?
I feel like I do one or the other. Like, I will actually read the description or I will watch the trailer, but I don't feel like I ever do both.
That's fair. A lot of the times, too, if it's a recommendation, I will watch the trailer just, so Sierra can see it first. Because, you know, 9 times out of 10, we're watching together. So I'm like, yeah. Does this interest you? You know, that kind of thing.
Are you going to be able to stomach this?
Yeah, can we deal?
That's Hunter and I. I'm like,
are you in the mood? Yeah, that's exactly right. Because sometimes she's like, can we just watch something, happy?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that.
So yeah, this is I Am a Killer released. Dale Sigler, this is who this is based on, basically, or as I like to call him, the Subway Slayer.
Okay.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I can appreciate that.
The Subway
Slayer.
It's
very fitting.
I'll still call him Dale or Sigler throughout this, though. We open episode 1, which is mostly what I'm going to be recapping for my portion of this. We open episode 1 with a beautiful rural landscape scene, oil derricks of the Texas Plains, and the narrator, or as we know him, Dale Sigler, poses the question, what is a fair punishment for murder? 30 years ago, I murdered a man and was sentenced to death. I already hate him.
I'm glad that you said that because I have in my notes here, he already sounds like somebody I'd want to punch in the face.
Honestly, and he says it in such this philosophical way. And I'm just like, dude, you're literally just saying that you got convicted of murder and you're saying what's a fair punishment? Being in prison is a fair punishment. What you're doing.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that the judge and jury already told you that. So anyway, now facts flash across the scene, which I actually found this to be quite interesting. So since the death penalty was reintroduced in 1976, more than 1,100 people have been sentenced to death for murders in Texas. In Texas. When I first read it, it didn't register to me until I read it back again. I was like, that's just in Texas.
That's in Texas alone.
1,100 people since 1976 have been sentenced to death for murders in Texas. Over 270 have either been overturned or thrown out, basically. But only 7 convicted murderers have walked from death row. This is the story of death row inmate number 999005.
I have to ask you, so what did you think of that number, that 7 people who went from the extreme, I'm on death row, to literally freedom? What did you think of that? Did that seem like a lot or a little to you?
out of the amount, once you know the amount of people, it seems like a little. But then when you think about what they really did, it does, it seems like a lot.
Exactly.
Especially when this is one of those seven people.
I had the exact same reaction.
I was like, oh, yeah, that's only seven. But then it's like, oh, that's seven. That's seven people, yeah, that like have, were at one point in jail for capital murder. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I know. That's, hey, that was a good question.
Yeah.
I like that.
No, I wanted to make it a point to ask you because I literally had that kind of conflicted response to it as well, where I was like, okay, well, it's only seven. But then I was like, but it's seven.
But it's seven. That's a lot of people.
It seems like a lot.
In one state, yeah, too. Yeah. Not just like all of the U.S. or the world or whatever. Exactly. So we get to know Sigler. This is kind of just a little synopsis, then I'll kind of go back. Whom we meet in 2017 while he's still in prison. He's become a religious man, having found God in prison after a life of abuse, instability, drugs, alcohol, crime, and homelessness. He explains to us that he's a changed man and uses the whole, like, only God can judge me. Like, those words literally come out of his mouth.
Yep.
It's a rhetoric. It's obvious. And it happens a lot throughout this entire thing. He tells the tale of his youth and his redemption. He cries over the fact that he took Zeltner's life after robbing a store of $400 and he shot him. He shot Zeltner six times, a few times in the back of the head after Zeltner collapsed, but thinks that he deserves a second chance because he's reformed himself and admits to his mistakes and his crimes. I believe the words were, don't be so prejudgmental.
Exactly.
Which is, what?
He is absolutely that type of person who tries to speak as though he's extremely intelligent and extremely well-educated, mm-hmm, but he's not.
No, he's definitely tries to come off, like I said, even as, like, philosophical even, right? And he, yeah, just, he says words like prejudgmental that aren't a thing. And yeah, he says he's a walking miracle. And all of these things.
Oh, he specifically said that his being a, quote, walking miracle was something that nobody could take from him.
Yeah.
Thus confirming that he was, in fact, the sort of person that I would want to punch in their face.
That's very true. Yeah. Like, I've declared that I am a miracle and, like, nobody else is going to change my mind, exactly, basically, is what you just said. Mm-hmm. So I just said a whole lot of, like, basically everything that happened. I mentioned a lot of names. And now I'm going to kind of go back and tell, like, more of the story from the way that they did. So in 1991, Sigler was arrested and sentenced for the fatal shooting of John Zeltner, who we later learned was actually a friend of Sigler's. People do come forward during this to say that Sigler didn't like Zeltner, but it's all kind of hearsay. At this point, Sigler is 27 years and 5 months into his sentence as we see him and he explains his aforementioned childhood. We learn his mother was only 15 years old when she got pregnant with him, and his father lost his job and became abusive. When he was 12, his parents split. He also confesses that when he was a child, he does mention at 10 years old, he was molested by someone in his family. And I don't think he ever, like, really says who it was. Because even Sierra asked me, she's like, who was it? And I'm like, maybe I missed it.
I want to say that he said it was an uncle, but I could be completely making that up because
he does talk about his uncles at some point, so maybe that's like hinting at it.
Yeah, we've discussed so much true crime, yeah, and we ingest so much true crime that I could completely be confusing that with another story or another
case.
Well,
and in this, because this is, I hate to say it, it's just like, it's typical of someone who does something horrific, you know? This is kind of like, we hear this in a lot of stories, so.
We do, and I feel like he's immediately trying to, like, set the stage to blame his own poor decision-making on his troubled upbringing.
Yeah. Well, he even says before this, he's like, oh, before you judge me, or you prejudge me, you have to know, like, the story first, basically. And it's, yeah, like, oh, here we go.
It's a pet peeve of mine. It's, yeah, a complete pet peeve of mine because people don't have to be defined by their hardships.
No, you're right.
They don't have to be a disability to you. They, mm-hmm, can be your motivation to do better and be better.
Sure.
And I say that coming from experience, personal experience of having dealt with a lot of these things on my own. Mm-hmm. His upbringing is not extraordinarily different from my own. So
I understand that. He can say that. 100%. 100%. So, yeah, you can say, you can change. If you're saying you're a changed man to walking miracle, then going right back to explaining on national television how horrible your life was, I don't see that being a changed man, right?
At least it doesn't sound like at this point you're taking ownership.
Ownership, yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was getting at. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So when he told his mom about this happening to him, he says that she kind of freaks out, you know, went into her room and shut the door. So this was when he turned to drugs, which he mentions cocaine, meth, alcohol, and of course he ends up homeless. And that's kind of when he says that he turns to the devil. Okay, now we are in Dallas and we meet Tommy Lenore, a detective who worked this case. He takes us to the subway. We see the crime scene photos with lots of blood, and they're very like graphic crime scene photos, I will say, like what they show anyways.
They basically only leave out the victim's face.
Pretty much.
You kind of see everything else, which is pretty intense. Yeah.
And the detective calls this an execution style murder. And of course, uses our favorite terminology of this was overkill.
Overkill.
So 6 days after this whole thing went down, Dale Sigler is arrested and he confesses. Now we're looking at some man-made waterfalls. Like, they just show a bunch of images of, like, different, like, waterfalls outside of what looks like a bank or, like, a government building.
Government building,
I'm like,
yeah.
Is this supposed to be serene? Because, like, you could maybe travel 20 minutes outside of the city. Maybe, I had to comment on that.
Maybe just some stock footage.
Yeah, that would work, too.
Yeah.
Netflix, I know you got some. So now we're looking at, these man-made waterfalls, while prosecutor Greg Miller wonders what Sigler should be charged with. He mentions the crime was particularly heinous, and he tells us how Sigler knew Zeltner would be working alone and that they did, in fact, actually know each other. This is where we see the report of a friend saying Sigler didn't like Zeltner. And then now we are told that Sigler came into the subway, chatted with Zeltner, had a cigarette, and then committed these crimes. Basically said, pulled out a gun, said, give me all the money in the register. And then when he gives him the money, Zeltner takes off and he follows him and shoots him a bunch of times. I have it in here. Don't worry. We'll get there. Now we cut to Sigler and he does a lot more of his like God talk. And we learn that in 19... Well, I don't want to like take anything away from that, but I feel like he just... It's really 90% of what he has to say. And that's why I say it that way.
And it comes across very... disgenuine.
Yeah.
It comes across like bad acting to me.
It truly does.
Which is why I don't respect it.
Yeah, I agree.
And other reasons that we will touch on.
That's fair. We will get there too. Because it gets dramatic, I have a feeling. We learned that in 1993, Texas changed its laws about choosing a jury. And in 1994, 3.5 years into Sigler's sentence, he is switched from death to life in prison. And he will be eligible for parole in 30 years' time. That's kind of what comes along with it.
Yeah, and that wasn't something that happened for him, like,
no.
Specifically. They didn't go in and, like, review his case specifically. It was kind of this just, like, blanket law.
Well, and I will say, too, I looked it up. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
I looked up the case that it had to do with, and it's Johnson versus Texas. And this was something that basically it was, like, a case where, like, a 19-year-old was given a gun by someone and says, go kill this person. And they did it. And it was like, maybe we should revisit, like, how we deal with these proceedings kind of thing. So, yeah, that's... Yeah, like you were saying, it wasn't for him. He wasn't special in any way.
Yeah, he hadn't done anything necessarily to deserve the possibility of parole in 30 years. They just said, you know, we've got to make this as simple and fair across the board as possible. So they said all of these sentences will be made or downgraded, I guess. Downgraded is the more appropriate term. From life in prison to...
Death.
To life in prison with an automatic chance for parole in 30 years.
Which, I mean, yeah, like you said, it's a blanket... law, rule, whatever, but I guess it was just easier than retrying all of them, right?
Exactly. And probably less costly to the taxpayers.
That's exactly right. And that's what they're going to care about. We flash to 2 years later, and Sigler has indeed been able to apply for parole after close to 30 years behind bars. He has now been in prison for 29 years and 4 months. And now we meet Carol.
Ugh, Mama
what
Carol.
A gem. We love Carol. I adore her. She is just the sweetest. Ugh. God bless. God bless Carol.
The only
I feel a little bad for her though.
Yeah, the only issue that I have with that relationship is not anything to do with Carol, but Dale's interactions with Carol, because he's speaking to her as though she's this like mother figure.
Yeah.
And even there's very like specific conversations that Carol has with the producers or, you know, for lack of a better description, with the audience.
Yeah.
Saying that, well, he tells me I'm his second mom, mm-hmm. and we just have this very like mother-son relationship. But the way that he behaves towards her feels a little incestuous to me.
Yeah, I actually wrote down like, We'll get there.
It gives me creepy vibes.
And it does. It's very like when you see them together, it doesn't read as a mom and son relationship.
Exactly.
You're right. Not to mention, I mean, like his mother was only 15 when she had him. So they're not even that far apart in age anyways. So she tells us that she met Dale when she was visiting her stepson in prison and says he was a really sweet man. She means Dale, not her stepson. Like, she meant Dale. So I'm also referring to Dale Sigler as Dale now because that's how she refers to him, and I just thought it was better to tell it in her way. So she basically is the kindest woman ever and lives in rural. There's that word again, rural. And I even tripped over it.
You're taking it for me this episode.
She says her stepson asked her to write to Dale because he was lonely, basically, to which she obliged, and she has been writing him ever since. He calls her Mama Carol, which, duh, we just said that. So I also love Miss Kitty and Ebony and all her other little cats, where she has like this little moment where she's like, you know, I take them in off the streets, and it's kind of like people, like, I've always, what did she say? I've always been one to want to help the helpless.
Yeah. And she very much brings that energy to this whole situation.
100%. There's not an ounce of like anything other than that. So Carol tells us that Dale has asked her to parole at her house. She says God tells her that this man needs her, and she agrees to let Dale move in and, quote, start over. So Dale is granted parole. He cries. Of course, he calls it a blessing. He explains how it will be hard to adapt, which to me is a huge talking point because so much of him talking about that was like cue the movie, like Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. When, like, you know, the world went and got itself in a big damn hurry, when he's talking about people going to the mall and being scared and all of that.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen that movie, so I had to think about it.
I think I've just watched that movie way too many times in my life. I used to love it when I was a teenager. He does make a good point, though, in saying everything is different now.
He does.
Because every 5 years, really, technology is different. So think about 30 years. There was no cell phones. There was no internet.
Yeah, he
does. I don't feel bad for him, but it is a moment that I thought was a huge talking point for them. Now we meet Johnny Bill, or John Zeltner's brother. They say that they call him Johnny Bill. They're his half-brothers. They're fishing. They're sad. It's all super sad. And they explain how John was a fun-loving guy and everyone loved him. And also that he was openly gay and everyone accepted it. This is now, we're talking about the victim, John Zeltner. They say they didn't even get notified that Dale was getting released, and both believe the justice system had failed them. And I don't blame them one at all.
Just
one
iota. No. Just to touch on both of those things. These people were from Mountain Home, Arkansas. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Mountain Home or just Arkansas in general or the Mid-South in general.
Well, I mean, I can guess.
Exactly. But the fact that these people from Mountain Home, Arkansas in the like 80s and 90s said, we didn't care. We loved him. He was open and honest about his sexuality, and it made no difference to us. We just accepted him. That's the best possible situation he probably could have been in. Like,
absolutely.
With regard
and
to his
they
family.
Seemed very genuine about it, too.
They did seem very genuine about it, and it just seemed like a very loving situation. One of the brothers even said, we talked on the phone every day, and I took it extremely hard when, you know, he was taken from us. Also, touching on the fact that they said that they weren't even notified that this dickbag got paroled.
How can that even be possible?
I don't know. And they never elaborate on it. They never explain how they found out. But can you imagine if the way they found out was because fucking Netflix called them up and they were like, hey, do you guys want to participate in this show?
I hadn't even considered that. It could very well have been that.
It could very well have been because they didn't make mention of it. Otherwise,
that's so, yeah, you're right. They didn't. And it's not like Netflix would want them to say like, oh, because you guys called us.
Exactly.
That makes them sound like dicks, you know? They're like, oh, wait, okay, here's an extra $5,000. Please don't mention the ones.
You're going to buy your silence
side
on
note,
that specific thing.
Side note, I don't want to downgrade Netflix, though, because even Sierra, like she, some of the documentaries I watch, she's like, I can't do this. I'm going in the other room. But this one, like it started and 5 minutes in, she's like, now this is a documentary. She's like, I'm like, well, it's Netflix. They've got the money to do it. So kudos to y'all for putting out some good ass documentaries.
And this was really well done.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. It was really well done. I'm also not speaking negatively of Netflix.
Exactly.
I'm speaking negatively of all
that
the
they
people
didn't know.
Yeah, all the people that failed to notify
the
them
justice system
up until the point that Netflix was potentially the one to be like, hey, we want you guys to participate in this, and they're like, wait, what
yeah.
what you talking about, sis?
What happened? Yeah, that's it. I hadn't even considered. Wow. Good point. Episode one kind of ends a little bit abruptly. I mean, like I told you off script, I watched episode two. I kept three out of it, though, so I'd be a little bit surprised with whatever you have to say.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to kind of wrap up episode one, basically, right here. After we kind of talk to the brothers and they say that, you know, the justice system had clearly failed them, and we agree. Now we are one day out from Dale's release as Carol is preparing his bedroom, which was adorable. It was like she was trying so hard and wanted it to be so nice. She is joined by her grandkids as they question why she's allowing Dale to move in there and how long they've been in touch. You know, kind of one of those, it's like a 90-day fiancé interrogation, really. That's what it felt like to me. Like, why are you doing this? Are you sure? The girl was basically like, you know, what if he kills you or someone else? And then her husband's like, well, I don't think he's going to do all that. Like, I mean, you got to chill out. And she's like, well, I do. You know, she kind of had that opinion. And it was cool to see a very big difference of opinion there, too.
They did have that. And I appreciated that dynamic. Another thing I want to say about that is, did no one tell them that Netflix was coming to visit that day?
I know. What was happening? Like, I mean, there's the messy bun, and then there's, like...
Then there's that rat's nest that was on top of her head.
Girl, I know. Jesus I don't even think Christ. She had a bra on.
Yeah, like, that's... I'm literally taking all of this in, and I'm like, there is no way that anybody told her that Netflix was coming by to visit that day.
I guess that's fair. I think that a lot in documentaries, so it didn't necessarily stick out, but when you bring it up, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's so funny. It's like people of Walmart, you know?
You are absolutely correct.
That's the image. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So, okay. So is this a Queen's Law? If Netflix calls you to do a documentary, put some clothes on, brush your hair.
Tell your family.
How about Queen's Law? Just brush your hair.
Just in general.
That's it. That's a Queen's Law. Brush your hair.
Brush your hair.
And I have to tell myself that sometimes. Sometimes I'm like, oh, did I brush? No, I need to. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brush your hair and wear clean underwear just in case you turn up dead that day or Netflix knocks on your
door. I like to have my matching like bra and panties because I'm like, you never know like when you're going to go. You never know if you're going to, or if you're just going to pass out somewhere and then someone's going to have to cut clothes off to do like CPR, you know, mm-hmm. You never know.
Or if you are injured in some sort of like traumatic way,
exactly.
EMS folks are going to show up and cut off all your clothes.
That's what I'm saying. They don't want to be, I mean, I've heard some stories. I'm sure you have some great, great ones.
I could be
a whole other podcast.
That could be a podcast in its entirety. You are absolutely correct.
So one thing I loved, like to kind of surmise, though, this visit with these two young people, she defends Dale, Carol that being she, defends Dale saying he will not kill again. And in prison, they actually call him the gentle giant.
Now I'm laughing at the television at this point.
I laughed too. I did.
For sure.
I at least giggled out loud. Yeah. So basically, just to wrap up, we see Carol driving to pick Dale up as she explains her emotions and feeling like the night went by so fast. She seems nervous as fuck. Like
she really does.
So nervous. And she was talking. I feel like they weren't even like asking her questions at this point. I feel like she was just like, doing what I do when I get nervous and just like talking my emotions out, like talking my feelings out or just talking and talk. Cause she was just going on about, I don't want to think I made the wrong decision. It was just like this back and forth. And I just felt like, oh, Carol.
Sweet angel baby mama Carol.
I love her. She gets there. We see her cute little white socks and her white kids. They kind of like zoom in on that standing there waiting for him to come out. And she says, if she made the wrong decision, that she will know on judgment day.
You can respect a person's convictions and their beliefs.
Absolutely.
And I do not want to speak negatively of anyone's religious affiliation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that is just such an ominous, like spine chilling statement.
It is. And they did it just right too, because I'm sure she said plenty of other, I'm sure that's not the last thing she said before he walked out, but the editing, man, it was just on par. It's exactly how you should have kind of wrapped that up. And can we just talk about the fact though for a second, like I feel like because she's been talking to this man for 30 years, she feels like she knows him, and she probably does to an extent, and he definitely, I don't think, would ever hurt her. Now, she's opening her home to someone she's only visited in prison who got convicted of capital murder. And she's just like, well, God can judge me. That's a lot.
It is a lot. She's making herself...
She downplays it.
The most vulnerable she possibly could.
Absolutely.
And
come just stay with me for what? What was it? Like
12 months.
12 months.
He had to be there for a minimum of 12 months.
Yeah. I mean, that's... I wish I believed in anything as much as this woman believes in God.
It's an extreme leap of faith.
It is. It absolutely really is. That's the perfect thank you terminology. So, yeah. We will... take a break and then...
Let's take a quick break.
Come back to why he's such a dickbag.
Exactly. I have a few choice descriptive words.
She has some opinions, honey.
She is strongly opinionated. We have returned.
Yes, we are. Back again.
Yes, ma'am, we are. Okay, I do want to start my portion of this by saying, disclaimer.
Oh boy.
These are my thoughts and my opinions regarding the information that we have access to with regard to this person and this situation. I just want to preface with that because old Dale seems like he might be the type to sue.
That's very fair.
All right. Since this was a series of three episodes that all contributed a little something to the overall story, I am going to touch on a few things from both episodes 2 and 3. This, however, will not be a full recap of those episodes. Mostly, I just want to talk about the things that will help us understand what a complete garbage monster Dale Wayne Shitstain truly is. And and this is how I shall be referring to him from this point forward.
I appreciate it.
Dale Wayne Shitstain.
Fabulous.
It works because it's both an accurate description and it rhymes.
And it's fun.
And it's fun. Yeah, it just rolls off the tongue nicely.
I like it.
Just to quickly recap, in episode 1, we learned that Shitstain's motive for killing John Zeltner was due to the fact that he was a drug addict. He was robbing the Subway sandwich shop where John worked, essentially to support his drug habit, and that he then murdered John because John knew him and he would have been able to identify him as the person who robbed him afterwards. Dale was seemingly remorseful after 30 years in prison. He seemingly understood his own wrongdoing. He was a better man, right? Or at
least... He was charged.
Yeah, he was charged and then changed. But those are the things that episode 1 would have us all believe. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that's what the parole board believed because he was, in fact, released.
That's right.
Hence the title of the FN episode, right? Let's see if there are maybe any inconsistencies in that, shall we?
And let's dive in.
Let's dive into that. In episode 2, the audience then has the opportunity to meet a man by the name of Sean Antilla. Sean and Shitstain were reportedly good friends. I'm not going to be able to get through this.
That was so good. You tried so hard, but like, it was neither of us. All right, let's try.
I'm not going to be able to get through this. Sean and Shitstain. Oh, God. We're reportedly good friends at the time of John Zeltner's murder, and Sean actually saw Dale the day after this crime had been committed. He was later called as a witness for the prosecution and testified. Shitstain bragged about having killed John in great detail and without remorse, stating that he didn't like the man because he suspected that John was gay, even boasting with statements like, and content warning here, mm-hmm. if you don't like derogatory words used that at one point in time were commonly used to describe gay men, skip ahead, saying things like, quote, yeah, I shot that faggot, end quote.
I was in the kitchen. So truth be told, when we do this, like, I'll usually watch things twice. Like, I'll just play it through, listen to it, get a grasp, and then I'll sit down, make sure I see everything, you know, all that. But I literally heard that in the kitchen and I was like, what?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's something that I guess people say, but it's just like so shocking to the ears.
Well, and it's
jarring, as you would say.
Yeah, it's so uncommon now, like 2021, it's uncommon that it is a bit shocking and a bit jarring for us to hear it just
that's fair, yeah,
thrown out into the atmosphere to assault our ears.
We also don't tend to hang out with people that would use that terminology, so
that's true, you know, that's very true. Sean also does a good bit of rambling here, but makes some pretty good points. Specifically, I thought he made a valid point about what the gay culture in Texas was like back in the 80s and 90s. illustrating that not only was it dangerous to be an openly queer person at that time, but it was also dangerous to be seen as someone who was tolerant of the gay community, because then you'd be labeled as queer, thus putting yourself also at risk. Which lended itself to a possible motivating factor being that Shitstain killed John during the robbery so that he wouldn't be seen as tolerant of him as a homosexual man. As in, it's better street cred, or it was safer for Dale in some sort of way to kill the homo rather than just rob him and walk away.
That doesn't make sense to me, but you're right. That's pretty much what he is alluding to. I guess I didn't see it that way, but you're totally right. That's exactly how he was making it. Yeah. Or portraying it, I suppose.
Yeah. So, and it might have felt very differently to you, because your perception is your reality.
I didn't honestly think much of it. I just thought this is his side of it. Like, this is what he knows. And I guess it is kind of... And I liked, too, that he really did say he was... He didn't seem uncomfortable with anybody who may be gay, but he was like, man, it's just like trying to fit in, basically. You don't say that... You don't accept it, because... If you do accept it, then you get labeled as it. And I don't want to get my ass beat, too. You know what I mean?
No, he was being very just realistic honest. About what life was at the time.
And honest. Yeah. He was being honest about it without coming off as an asshole about it.
You're absolutely correct. Aside from those details, the big takeaway from episode 2 is that closing the show, we get Dale Wayne Shitstain very dramatically saying that throughout the whole situation, that's the investigation, his signed confession, the trial, 30 years of incarceration, parole hearings, etc., etc., he didn't actually tell the truth about what had happened. Mm-hmm. What he had told people that whole time was that this was a robbery turned into murder just because of circumstance. But he says that the truth was actually a far different story. Shitstain claims that the robbery was actually perpetrated to, quote, cover up the true intention of the homicide, that he had in fact gone to the subway that night to purposefully kill John Zeltner, because he claimed that Zeltner was trying to blackmail him into a homosexual relationship. And just like that, like somebody switched off a light, the screen goes black and episode 2 ends.
Mic drop.
And it was fantastic editing once again.
It was definitely, but also that was when my brain was like, all right, shit. He said it. Now I gotta let Wayne tell the rest of it. Let me be surprised. Because I really wanted, it is a good way of being, I really wanted to watch
it
the next
left
one.
You
but
on
I
a
like,
cliffhanger.
I like having my annoying reactions, I guess, when
it
you tell me things.
Definitely left you on a cliffhanger.
It did. And they're, really good at that in this. Okay. Even though there's only 3 episodes, and they're not even that long. It's definitely easy to get through. Quick to get through.
Yeah, they were,
say.
What, like 30, 40 minutes at most? Something like that.
And before we get to episode 3, can we talk about one thing?
Is it the foot wash? Oh my God.
You had mentioned earlier, and I can't mention it yet, because we haven't got to the part where he's gotten released yet. But yeah, him and Mama Carol, like how you mentioned that they have like this weird, different, I shouldn't say weird, it's like a different relationship. It's weird in my opinion.
He's a little incestuous behaving with
her. Yeah, like.
Little too handsy.
There's
like
a whole foot washing scene.
That is the most uncomfortable thing I've ever seen on television. And I watch a lot of horror and a lot of true crime.
Yeah, it's and we like the more fucked up, the better for me. But something about this, because it's like just, it's not meant to be fucked up, but it is. It is.
And the fact that he's, A, the fact that he's doing it is a little bit weird, but B, the fact that he's insisting on doing it while the cameras are rolling and it's supposed to be this...
He wants people to see it.
Yeah, he's supposed to be honoring her as this person who's doing this amazing thing for him, and he's supposed to be, like, being subservient to her by, like, washing her feet. I understand it's very symbolic. I've read the Bible cover to cover.
Sure.
I understand the symbolism behind it. It's just so awkward and uncomfortable and so inappropriate to do in that setting.
It's like I had said to you, I was like, well, obviously he's read, the Bible in many different testaments. You couldn't have chosen something else.
Yeah.
There's so many other things you could have done.
I actually just think that, hey, if you feel strongly convicted to do that, maybe that's something that he feels really
privately.
Strongly about.
Cool.
Privately. Exactly. But also, like, when he first... walked out of the prison, he kissed her on the mouth.
It's like this overdone, like, I'm a grateful man now. You know, he needs other people to see it.
Yeah, it's just...
And he did kiss her on the mouth, and I totally forgot about that part. I think
there were
I,
a few other times I, he kissed her on the mouth. But yeah, again, yeah, you what you just mentioned, it all feels like bad acting to me.
I do also love, though, that like when Mama Carol shows him the room, and he's looking at it, and he's just like, you know, my cell was this small, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, do you like it or not? Yeah.
Well, and it was I love her as well, but it was little things like that where I felt like he was continually trying to make himself the victim of
this. This is all I had, especially when like they ate together and he was mm-hmm. like, I'm not, you know, 15 minutes. He's like, some people are so institutionalized that they tap on like the whole thing. I'm just like, I mean, I get 30 years in prison is a long time, but not everything you talk about has to be like, oh, woe is me. Exactly. My poor ass being in prison for killing someone,
for taking someone's life, literally taking their life
in cold blood. Anyway, sorry, I just a couple things that I was like, we need to talk about that.
No, you're absolutely fine.
Trigger warning for a foot washing scene for y'all.
It's just, it's so creepy.
It's a lot. And poor Mama Carol, she probably was like, I want to enjoy this, but I feel like this is not normal for the TV.
It looked awkward even for her.
Yeah, she definitely was like, I want to appreciate him, but like, what is going on? I also don't want my TV. I don't even want my feet on TV. Anyways, let's continue.
Episode 3.
Yeah.
Appropriately titled A New Motive. Opens with Shitstain telling us all that he's gotten permission from his parole officer to leave Mama Carol's home in order to attend church services. Because previously we had been told that he was on this like super strict parole where he had to wear a GPS and he wasn't supposed to leave the residence without permission from his parole officer, etc., etc. So it was a pretty strict situation. But now we know that he's gotten permission to go to church. And on this particular day, Dale is attending church and sharing his testimony with the other patrons. Mm-hmm. A testimony that he begins by saying, I went to court for capital murder in 1990 and ended up on death row for 3 years for a life that I took from someone who was trying to blackmail me into a homosexual relationship.
That's how you start it?
Oh, yeah. That's how he started it.
Okay. First, though, I want to say he's not supposed to be socializing with other people. That was, like, one of the terms of his, like, parole. So that's kind of annoying that, like, okay, you're allowed to socialize at church, though. Anyways. But, wow.
Oh, it
off with a bang.
Jesus Christ. This whole situation infuriates me so much. So
then,
so
what?
Much.
Then what does he say? I'm like all tongue-tied.
Well, we don't get the full testimony right there. There's some really clever editing where they started out that way, and then they cut to Dale, and all the ways now that he's changing his story. Throughout the episode, Dale explains that having been sexually abused as a child left him emotionally scarred. That into his adult life, that trauma made him question his own sexuality and or whether or not he could truly call himself a man. And those were his words, not mine. That is not terminology that I would use.
Ever.
We also learned that around the time Dale committed this crime, he had been feeling very emotionally vulnerable, which is what he attributed his drug use to. And that all tracks for me, actually.
I get that. Yeah.
A lot of people who struggle with behavioral health attempt to self-medicate with drugs and alcohol. And I understand, like, being abused as a child really, really, really affects you.
Talk to my early 20s.
Yeah. I get that. That all tracks for me. None of these things are out of the ordinary, unbelievable, or unusual so far.
Sure.
He tells the audience that during this time, he actually met and befriended John Zeltner. That John would allow Shitstain the opportunity to come to his home, take a shower, occasionally take naps on the couch. Because remember, from what we understand, Dale was homeless. He was living on the streets at that point.
Oh, yeah. I guess I said homeless a couple of times, but I didn't consider that even during this whole thing.
Well, I think it was because they didn't actually use the term homeless, but a couple of times they referred to Dale living on the streets.
That's fair. Yeah,
because I had a moment where I was like, well, I don't want to say in my notes that he was homeless because that's just a suspicion that I have.
Sure.
But I did catch a couple of times going back where he said he was living on the streets.
That makes sense.
I think it's just because they didn't use the terminology. The two were reportedly close enough at that point in time, so they were good enough friends that Dale confided in John about his having been abused as a child. So, I mean, so far this seems like a decent situation, right?
Yeah, that's a really close friendship.
Exactly.
That's why I'm saying I had a vibe when I was seeing the whole comment about how Sigler didn't like Zeltner. I'm like, I just don't buy that.
And they didn't really corroborate that.
They didn't.
It was just like a claim.
It was one claim on one police report from one person that they didn't even mention which friend it was, I don't think. So.
Yeah. According to Shitstain, on one such occasion, as, you know, he went over to John's place, he showered, he was taking a nap on the couch. He said on one of those occasions, he woke to find John on top of him. Shitstain supposedly reacts by pushing John off and questioning why he'd do something like that, to which John is said to have responded by threatening, quote, if you don't agree, I'm going to tell everyone that you're doing it anyway, end quote.
That's such a high school, like, boy wonder years, like, moment. That's not...
It's not real life.
No.
So Shitstain's response to this supposed threat from John was, quote, I don't have anything to live for. If you do that, I promise you I'll kill you, end quote. And I understand that I'm using a lot of quotes here, but I want people to understand the full velocity.
But he's the one saying these things.
Exactly. These are literally things that are coming out of his mouth. And I, every time he said some shit like this, I just got more and more angered.
Especially because, like we had said before, you know how he talks, you know, like he's a very intelligent man, philosophical almost, as I like to keep saying. Mm-hmm. When you say things like that in that tone of voice, doesn't it just piss you off more? I just can't with this guy. I just can't.
Then, according to Dale, 2 days later, John was making phone calls to mutual friends of theirs, asking if anyone had seen him. Shitstain perceived this as a threat, assuming that John was going to go through with his plans to tell people that they were in a sexual relationship with one another, to which Dale decided he was going to fight back by making good on his threat to kill John, because, and like I said, I know that I'm using a lot of quotes here, and it might get a little bit annoying, but I just want to illustrate just how fucked up this guy is.
Right.
So Shitstain decides that he's going to kill John because, quote, I may be a lot of things, and I might even be a murderer, but I have never been a homosexual, end quote. And he said that while he was fucking crying, as though that's the worst possible thing.
That's just, wow, that's intense.
It's disgusting, is what it is.
It is disgusting. It's how, like, small... You really think that being a murderer is better than being a homosexual is basically what you just said.
Yeah.
Like, that's okay. Yeah. I can recover from that, but there ain't no coming back from being a homosexual.
Clearly.
That's wild.
That is absolutely what he was indicating. And he was crying, like shaky voice, bad acting, and all that.
Which also means it's a lie.
Now the story goes, on April 6th of 1990, Dale Wayne Shitstain shows up to the subway shop. And he's greeted by John Zeltner, who says, so you've decided to come around and see things my way, huh? This is the bullshit this guy's spewing. It's like a bad soap opera.
Like, literally, yeah. It's
he's
exactly
clearly
like it is.
Making this up as he goes
we're
along.
On Days of Our Lives. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay.
To which Dale responded by pulling a .45 out of his pocket, shooting the man 6 times in the chest, and then shooting him twice more in the back of the head.
That doesn't even make sense.
No, it absolutely does not. And we're not the only people that think so.
Right.
And I do briefly want to mention here that we, like I said, had originally cut away from Shitstain sharing his testimony with the church members. Then we get the above-mentioned version of his story, a.k.a. we get a giant-sized dose of victim-blaming and bullshit,
mm-hmm.
only to cut back to the end of Dale sharing his testimony with his church congregation, and the entire group of them, when he's done, stand up and applaud him. So fuck those people.
I am just baffled.
Fuck yeah. Those people with a giant cactus.
Literally a giant one. Y'all don't even get your own individual ones. You have to use the same. That's so...
It's horrific.
Ugh.
Horrific.
Did you watch Trial by Media? Did you watch all of those?
I only watched the one,
There's the one Jenny on Jones there one. Where it was like a rape trial, and I can't believe I didn't know anything about it. It was like 6 guys involved. It's a wild, wild case, and it I've never seen such victim blaming in my life.
So disgusting.
It was hard to even get through. So yeah, that kind of feels like where his mindset's at, mm-hmm. where these people's mindset is at.
Yeah.
Someone who would support gang rape would also support, you know, just killing a guy because he's a homosexual, basically, because he wants you to be gay with him. He wants to spread the gay.
It's contagious, you know.
Oh, God.
Then we get back to our buddy Tommy Lenore, who is the investigating detective in the original case, as mm-hmm. some of you may remember. He's given the opportunity to listen to a recording of Shitstain's new version of the events, to which he quickly becomes literally my most favorite person ever. And this is a long quote, but I just, again, wanted to illustrate. I don't, just go out and watch it. Just watch it. But he becomes my most favorite person by saying, if he's saying that this is what he believes today and still believes his actions to be justified, I'll be frank with you. I got problems. I've got concerns for society being exposed to that type of irrational thought. I'm not going to call anyone a liar because I don't know what's true and what's not true, but I will say this. If that information is true and accurate, that's information that should have been told to the jury. So I'll be frank with you. I wouldn't believe that at face value, end quote.
Nice. Yeah. Good for him for Good like for having him. A head on his shoulders.
Yeah. He, of course, goes on to explain that even if this information were true, murder is an extremely irrational, unjustified response to such a threat.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yes. And what he perceives to be happening is that Shitstain is attempting to reverse the roles, attempting to turn himself into the victim and make John Zeltner the bad guy.
Or almost even like a vigilante of some sort, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? To these people, he could be. So, yeah, geez, Louise.
Furthermore, Detective Lenore rants, and I mean rants, he went off, that Dale has no one to blame for his actions other than himself, that he needs to be humbled and grateful for the opportunity to be paroled, and moving forward, he needs to try to do the right thing, which clearly he's not doing at this point.
No.
Later, when asked by producers why Dale Wayne Shitstain didn't share the air quotes real story with people before now, he claims that he attempted to share this information with his lawyers at the time, but he was ridiculed and told that they didn't care. To which I call complete bullshit.
No, they're going to use that as much as they can in court. What
Absolutely.
Do you mean?
Because at least as of July 2020, so most definitely in 1990, the gay and trans panic defense Absolutely. Was legal in yeah. the state of Texas, and you cannot tell me that his attorneys wouldn't have attempted that defense over a robbery gone wrong sort of defense.
Especially knowing that the victim was gay.
Exactly.
Like they probably Openly. Would have first and foremost brought that up.
And he probably would have gotten off completely.
Yeah, you're not
so
wrong.
So you can't fucking tell me.
He definitely wouldn't have gotten capital murder. He definitely would not have gotten a life or a death sentence.
We then get Shitstain spewing more garbage about how he didn't kill John because he was a homosexual. That he's not homophobic and doesn't take issue with other people's life choices. That he's not judgmental of people at all. Don't get the guy wrong. Homosexuals are an abomination. And he's essentially...
Jesus.
And he says essentially in his very next breath that he's not at all judgmental, but homosexuals are damned because of the deviant life that they live. But he doesn't judge them for it.
Oh, wow, wow. I don't even know what to say about that. That's just, jeez. That sounds like him, though.
It's all very disgusting.
It's just, it's baffling words to hear, but I'm just not surprised that it's coming out of his mouth.
I keep using this term, but it's disgusting. It's infuriating.
It's wrong.
It's wrong. It's all just horrible and horrific. Here we even get a quick word from our prosecutor friend, Greg Miller, who essentially just validates all of our feelings about this new motive, calling it a perfect defense because the true victim in this situation is unable to speak out and defend himself, adding that even if these things were in fact true, which he does not believe them to be, the response was extreme and unjustifiable.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah.
We say that all the time when it comes to certain cases. We're like, you know, that mm-hmm. maybe that was something that made you mad, but it doesn't justify murder.
No, absolutely not. In response to this pile of BS, the Zeltner family issued a statement citing that they reject any attempt by Dale Wayne Sigler to blame John for his own murder, and they remain strongly opposed to his being released from prison.
Good. And I like the way they worded that, too.
Yeah, they did a very good job. They definitely took the high road there.
For sure. That was very well put.
Closing out episode 3, we learn that a few months after being paroled, Shitstain has been given driving privileges. He is working at a local ranch, and he's still living with Mama Carol. Seemingly living and thriving. Still talking about all of the hardships of his own life, and in my opinion, victim-blaming up into the very last moment that he has the opportunity to do so, at least with this documentary and film crew.
Did he ever get a job, I wonder?
He did. I just said that he was working at a local ranch.
Working at a local ranch. Oh, I thought, sorry, I missed that part.
No, you're fine. She doesn't listen to me, folks. Ranch. She doesn't listen to me.
I thought you said that he visited it, my bad.
The official ending of the episode lets the audience know that he will remain on parole for the remainder of his life.
Good.
Which he needs to.
Absolutely needs to.
And any violation of his parole in any way, shape, or form can lead to him being locked back up.
And I'm hoping, because it's parole, like, and not just, you know, a probationary status, I hope that he has that little ankle monitor on him at all times for the rest of his life.
For the rest of his life.
So they know where his motherfucking ass is.
I hope so as well. And then the only real updates I could find out about Dale's life now is that though he actually lost that job at the ranch,
I didn't know he had, my bad.
Yeah, he actually lost that job. He was able to secure himself another one, and now he's in his own place. However, he and Mama Carol are still friends, and they still see each other almost every day. And that's according to, I think it was Oxygen.com.
Well, who else is he going to hang out with? He probably isn't supposed to socialize still, hopefully.
All of his church buddies, apparently.
I guess so. That's very true.
That's all I have.
Yeah, well, it's disappointing, but it is what it is. I mean, you know, sometimes it doesn't end the way we want it to.
You're absolutely correct. They can't all be happy endings, and most of them aren't in the true crime world. I don't know what I think other than this all leaves me feeling very unsettled.
Yeah, because he's out there, you know?
I think that I would feel much better about the situation if he weren't out there victim blaming, because that's so clearly what he's doing.
That's exactly what I mean. If we had a different vibe about him, a different sense about him, if he didn't all of a sudden change his story and make it what it was, then maybe we'd be like, okay, well, let's check up on him in a couple years and see how he's doing. But yeah. What he did and how he changed his story and how everything and the things that he said and the things that he believes, I find that problematic. I do.
I find it unnerving.
I
find it problematic, unnerving, unsettling. And I honestly wish that it was some sort of violation of his parole. I wish that fucking parole board had seen this little like series on Netflix and they're like, you know what, throw his ass back in a cell for a few more years.
Hey, there's a good chance though that someone could be working on that, you know. You never know. We will see. So yeah, that sucks. That's that mini tiny series. It's definitely very short for as far as like a mini docuseries goes.
Yeah, I highly suspect that he was going to be featured as one of the stories on the series I Am a Killer. And then there was that development in his case while they were in the process of filming those episodes. And they're like, all right, well, this is going to be like a spinoff.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And how often are they going to have an opportunity?
What an opportunity for them, for sure.
Yeah.
And for us, because like we said, it's only seven. That's one of seven. I mean, there may be more now, but that wasn't even that long ago that he was released. So maybe not.
I just hope he really is a changed man. Mm-hmm. I hope that at some point he stops victim blaming and he stops blaming everything else in his life other than his own bad decision making. Mm-hmm. And I also hope that John Zeltner is resting in peace and power and that his family receives some sort of peace at some point as well.
I think our number one Queen's Law should be don't victim blame.
Don't victim blame.
We're just going to jump that to the
Queen's
front.
Queen's Law. Well, we couldn't remember what the first one was.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So, we're going to jump to the front. So,
don't victim blame.
That's what it's going to be.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we stand. Kind of what we stand for, right?
Absolutely.
I love that. Don't victim blame.
Nothing makes me more angry, honestly, when it comes to any type of case, really.
I agree completely.
So, yeah. That was the story. But we should leave you on a more positive note or something. Oh, I found this girl on Instagram, actually. You know what? This should be a recommendation at the very end to make us all happier. Her name is... She's a really adorable autistic girl. Her name is Paige Lael, and she does mostly TikToks, I learned. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like her big platform, and her videos are adorable, but she kind of just lets you check into the wrong things people think about people with autism.
Okay.
The misconceptions. And it's actually kind of funny because she's super cute and super positive, but she can, like, definitely read someone for filth. Okay. She's definitely had some people who have claimed things, like, delete TikTok, like, delete their entire pages, because she is great, a great spokesperson. And I think everybody who wants to have a good day should just go check out her page, at Paige, L-A-Y-L-E, Paige Layl. I love her. She's already Insta-famous. She doesn't need my shout-out, but she makes me happy.
Is it P-A-I-G-E?
Yes, P-A-I-G-E, okay. L-A-Y-L-E. Yep.
All right. I will check that
out. That's right. It's a more positive note. She's adorable.
I hope all of you folks will check her out as well.
That's all that I have, though.
We also hope that you enjoyed this episode as somber and sad and angry
as we were and are.
As we were about it. But this was just not one that I was going to be able to not be very emphatic and angry and dropping the F-bomb all over the place, because I just felt really, really, really strongly about
especially when you knew what you know. Like, now that I know, like, I hate the guy, but I hate him even more now. Like, I really, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah.
So,
if you liked our episode, you can go to our Apple Music or iTunes and subscribe and give us 5 stars and give us a nice little review. We've got our Patreon. We always like to mention. Oh, yeah. Go buy some stuff. We've got some merch out there, too. Wayne's wearing one of our hoodies right now.
I am.
He looks lovely in pink.
Thank you. Pink is my fave. Yeah, you can stream us on basically all the platforms except Stitcher. I'm not really sure if anybody has a friend over at Stitcher.
Maybe you could talk to.
Maybe you could put in a good word for us. But, yeah, dive into the DMs. Do all the good things. Tell us if you like the show.
Yeah.
Tell us if you didn't like the show. Just do it in a sweet, kind, caring, respectful way.
Yeah, we can't take harsh criticism.
Mm-mm.
We're too soft.
We're too soft.
But it's
around,
like,
the midsection for that.
That's definitely true.
I am, girl.
But it is Slay Queen's Pod everywhere. Mm-hmm. Even on TikTok.
Even on TikTok. Not that we know what we're doing there, but
we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. We also would like you all to do one very important thing. What is that important thing, Ashley?
Go out and slay, queens.
That is correct. Just not.
Just not each other.
I'm going away, but I won't come back on a lonely